Feminist women.
Mulheres feministas.
Zanone feminist.
Vanyu vachikonzero chevakadzi.
Nessa.
Mulheres feministas.
Yam femini. Femactivi.
Nari mukti.
Matapang na babae. Kechi mai ka ishk.
Prevailing ways of the decolonial movement in the U.S. and other Western countries, for sure to learn some inside details regarding the fall of the Berlin Wall and reunification, and the current political climate in Germany. Please take a listen. Barbara Walker and Shireen Aga. Let's start by each of you saying a little bit about who you are and how you ended up in Berlin.
We actually met 50 years ago in October 1976. We met because our German Jewish mothers were best of friends. They met in England. They were refugees from Germany, and they met in England. They had rooms in the same house. Time where they were living in Manchester, England, there was a club called the International Club, where all the students, all the internationals met, all the students, refugees, everybody. That's where they met our fathers. So Shireen's dad is from India, and my dad is from Jamaica. So the two ladies married their respective boyfriends. One went to India, one went to the Caribbean. We started out in what was British Guyana, which is now Guyana. In about 57, we went back to Jamaica. Over all these years, one friend living in the Caribbean and the other friend living in India, our mothers shared their lives with letters and photographs. They maintained a very close friendship over the years, corresponding this way. Kind of a dead form of correspondence now. But they maintained a very close friendship. And in 1976, when Shireen had already moved to Germany and she had her first job, and her first job was giving her her first holidays, and she had no money. We were at the time then living in Geneva. So our mothers arranged that Shireen should come from Cologne to Germany, to Geneva, and all she had to do was pay for a train ticket, and we would take care of the rest. And that's how we met.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah. And that's the abbreviated version.
Well, you referred to letters as something dead. I think you have a treasure trove, documentation of two generations, really, because I'm sure they spoke, their daughters, etc., right?
They did. And there was always like, when birthdays, there was like photographs were sent across continents, and Christmas time would be a Christmas card with a photograph of the family or a photograph of the kids. And it's actually quite amazing. And in 1976, when Shireen had already moved to Germany and she had her first job, and her first job was giving her her first holidays, and she had no money. So our mothers arranged that Shireen should come from Cologne to Geneva, and all she had to do was pay for a train ticket, and we would take care of the rest. And that's how we met.
What a story.
That's the abbreviated version.
I think you have a treasure trove, documentation of two generations, because I'm sure they spoke about their daughters.
They did. And it's actually quite amazing. I remember that Shireen's mom came to visit us in Switzerland. I think that was also 1976. I'll never forget. I went with my dad to the airport to collect her. We got home and the two ladies sat down and started to chat with one another as if the last time they'd seen each other was yesterday. I will never forget that moment. It was just amazing.
Extraordinary that these two women's friendships lasted so long and in a deep way that you're talking about. Thank you. Shireen, can we hear your voice? What's your part of this story?
Well, actually, as Barbara was saying, our mothers tried to introduce us to each other when we were still in school. In those days, one had 10 friends. I had to go to a boarding school because my father worked on the tea plantations, and so there was nothing around us except nature and acres of tea. I had a very strict regime, and Barbara was a day boarder, wrote to me about beach parties and things like that, of course, which I couldn't relate to at all. So it's surprising that given our pension friendship attempt was a failure, that we did click when we finally met personally.
Pen friends can become more.
Yes. When my parents went back to Jamaica, I stayed on in Europe and finally ended up in Cologne, where Shireen was living. She was working in a hotel. She's actually in and out hotelier. That's what she's done all her life. And I'm an artist. We started out with in very small ways in Cologne. Shireen found me a job at a funny little art gallery where I learned very useful things for me, like framing pictures. I managed to find half day work so that I could be an artist and ran a gallery together with other young unknown artists. When you're young, you don't get noticed by the big important galleries. So we decided this, well, if they won't pay us any attention, we'll have our own gallery. It was a lot of fun and we had really great exhibitions. Also, other unknown young artists at the time. After the wall came down in 1989, we started feeling uncomfortable as BIPOC people. And there was actually quite a lot of very violent right-wing radical attacks on foreigners, on non-whites. And Shireen was in a career juncture. We thought we'd leave, went to Jamaica, where we have spent the last almost 30 years. And we operated a small, environmentally friendly boutique hotel in Jamaica, in the Northeast, Jamaica's very first ever eco hotel, green hotel. We were very active politically when we lived in Germany. That was more about going to demonstrations and raising your voice against things. And we went to every event to free Nelson Mandela, all the events against the Pershing missiles. I mean, we went to everything. Somehow, though, we felt you need to do more than just be an activist out there. You need to actually do something to make a change.
So you were there at a very historic moment. Your
Yes.
mothers were there at a very historic moment
That's
also.
right.
Luck they were
Yes.
able to get out. And then you two met. What a great meeting starting as pen friends. And now 50 years later, sharing your lives. And in between, well, you started to tell the story of the first eco
Yes.
hotel in Jamaica. So what gave you that idea?
We were also quite involved in the beginnings of the green movement here in Germany in the 80s. And I would say we would consider ourselves environmental activists. And so we wanted to create something, a business with the environmental model based on environmental structures. And also to be able to show that a very small business can actually make a change. And part of what we wanted to do with opening the hotel was not just to make bags of money, which we didn't, but was also to make change in our community through employing young people with little education, in particular women, to train and give them the possibility to have a career if they could follow the lead. So this was the base of our business. I think we were activists because particularly for many countries of the global south, and in particular the small Caribbean islands, tourism is the main source of income today. What is interesting is that very often the tourism structures are such that the wealth created through this industry doesn't actually flow and benefit the local population, but it flows out to the large international chains. There has already been parallels drawn to the structures of colonization and tourism today. If we take the Caribbean islands, they were colonized. Slavery was existing in order that the sugarcane fields could be harvested, but the benefits didn't remain in the country. The raw sugar was then sent to the mother country, England, and the refineries were there and it was sold there. And they were the ones that benefited from this agriculture conducted in the Caribbean islands. The irony is, of course, when slavery was abolished, it wasn't the slaves that received any compensation, it was the slave owners.
As you said, Shireen, the hotel industry is another form of extractivism. Hotel, car rental, etc., are all international.
More and more. When
Yes.
we went to Jamaica, it was still mainly Jamaican-based companies. But over the years, more and more international companies have come in, and it's become now simply a matter of heads and beds, and the scale of the industry just keeps growing. So when we went, a 300-room hotel was considered a large hotel, and now you have between 2,000 or
2,000 rooms,
something.
yeah.
You notice even in these international companies, it's all the managers from the original countries, be it
Right.
Spain or Mexico or wherever. It's only the more menial tasks. Jobs are provided for that, but people don't really have much opportunity to come up the ladder.
Probably at least 60% of what is earned by these large international companies leaves the Caribbean.
See, when you're feeding like a 2,000-room hotel, you can't always rely on the local farmer in your neighborhood because maybe the crop, there's heavy rainfall, maybe there's no rainfall. A lot of them rely on imported foods. We went out of our way to develop a network, local producers, whether it was farmers, fishermen, even something like writing paper. You normally have a little block of paper in the guest bedrooms for people to write notes. We supported a women's group who made handmade paper. We would collect our old paper, give it to them. They would then use this as the base to produce new handmade paper. Whether it was the handmade paper or handmade chocolate tea balls with the story about tea balls, what is chocolate tea balls and how do you make it?
Again, also made by a women's collective.
And then we had hand-woven baskets, wicker baskets, in which they put the chocolate tea balls. So we had a lot of similar cycles. And one of the things we prided ourselves in is that every day we gave our guests a little gift, which was made in some community project in Northeast where we were located. In very small, practical ways.
You were practicing
We're practicing.
ecofeminism.
Yeah, I call it ecofeminism. We also involve, of course, the aspect of energy source. We began with hot water heating, which is the easiest,
Solar.
solar, and we also had our own wastewater treatment. And then we sort of went up and then had solar electricity. Water is a big problem, water supplies. So we had
Water.
300,000 liters of rainwater that we collected off the roofs that we used. So there was that aspect as well that are very, very keen to be environmentally friendly in the physical sense. So in the physical sense as well as the social sense.
We have to
Wow.
smile because all these years later now, if we are looking at global politics, everyone in the world has woken up to the fact how essential it is to be independent as far as securing your own energy sources are, as far as possible, renewable, because then no one can squeeze you by saying, well, I'm going to cut off your supply because
Right.
solar, wind, that's just out there in the world. As long as the planet exists, we're going to have solar. I don't think anyone can block the sunshine in another country.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. There is a very interesting article I recently read from the gentleman, I think, who was the founder of the organization 350.org,
That's a Bill McKibben, huh?
where he says renewable energy can be a very important part of securing global peace.
Tell us, where was the hotel? What was its name?
Hotel was in the northeast of Jamaica, just outside a little town called Port Antonio. It was called Hotel Mockingbird Hill because it was very, very practical, very pragmatic. When we bought the property, it was called Mockingbird Hill. And for name recognition, we figured if we changed the name and somebody came into the little town of Port Antonio, like a visitor, and said,
and wanted to get a taxi driver to bring them to our hotel, and we had a new name, the taxi driver may not have known where to go. He just left the name, added hotel, that became the name of our hotel. Maybe 10 years into our operations, and we were visited by someone whose husband was a birding expert. He said, "Do you know you're sitting on a gold mine?" And we said, "What for a gold mine?" And he said, "Do you know what birds you have on your property?" And we said, "No." And then he started to tell us all the birds that he was seeing on the property, at least 20 of Jamaica's 28 endemic birds.
So you are
So,
sitting on a bird sanctuary, in a sense,
in
yes.
a sense, yes. And we were one of the first people to also to try and develop birding tourism on the island, because that's a very soft form of tourism with very small numbers of people. Shireen developed our gardens. We had bought a house with a jungle, and Shireen developed the gardens over the years in such a way that it would attract the birds. So we did quite a lot of business with people coming down to see birds. It's a very gentle form of tourism. Usually your guests are all very interested in what's local in the community, very
Amen.
respectful of the environment. So we enjoyed those guests on the whole very much. And
And
they
you
came from
invited
different
those
regions.
guests by how you operated the
That's right.
business.
For us, one of the most important factors was really giving back to the community in the form of empowering young people. Last winter, we went back to Jamaica for the first time after many years, and we met a couple of our ex-employees. It was really, really wonderful to get their feedback, because they have now become quite successful in their own lives. They quite clearly say that the reason that they have been able to become successful is because of the training that they got from us. It was really just wonderful to see how well they're doing and to hear that from them, and also from many of the members in the community who we met, to get their positive feedback on our years in Port Antonio made us feel, yeah, okay, we did achieve what we wanted to. It might just be a little tiny bit, but we did achieve something.
And those little tiny bits really, really matter,
Yes.
especially to the individual people who are affected and also the communities that they are a part of. How long did the hotel last?
30 years.
30. Wow.
Yep. We finally managed to sell it in May of 9, 2024. And we're actually quite grateful, because when you're the manager of a big hotel, you have a whole chain of people behind you, and it might not be that taxing. But when you run a 10-room hotel, you're the head cook and bottle washer.
You do everything.
You do everything. And physically, the older we were finding that physically it was getting more and more challenging. Also, the fact that the type of the way tourism had changed or was changing with things like Expedia, Booking.com, TripAdvisor, travel changed. We found people were staying for shorter stays, shorter booking periods. When you're a mom and pop kind of organization, it's difficult to handle. Somebody sort of on the road and says, "Oh, let's stay at Mockingbird tonight." And they make a booking on booking.com and drive up the hill, and the housekeeper went home 2 hours ago, and you're not ready. So it got really, really, really tough. And we laugh sometimes and say, when we began, there was just no stress at all. Your booking requests came in by letter or by fax,
Right, the old
right?
fax machine,
That's
right?
right, the nice fax machine. And so you had this, there was this time that you had to respond. And then people came and they stayed for a week, or they stayed for 2 weeks, and it was all so easygoing and also laid back, and no one was really rushed. And then came the internet, and then came email, and then, someone would send out an email request and expect that you would be answering it straight away. And the more the technology became involved, the more stressful it became.
So the speed of technology, right, which is supposed to be quote efficient, in fact, really undermined the kind of the ethos of your hotel
Yes,
and the
absolutely.
intention of your hotel.
That's right.
And I
And
hadn't quite realized that.
very often the people would choose the hotel, but it was the wrong property for them.
Right.
They made assumptions.
They made the assumption any and every hotel must have air conditioning, for example. And every hotel must have TV. Well, the idea wasn't to come into this beautiful natural spot and watch the same news that you'd watch at home. The whole point.
Exactly.
So people who came with those expectations were obviously not too happy.
Right.
And I think that's also part of this process of just booking everything last minute, booking everything quickly, even though we had clearly in the description stated we do not have the following. They just wouldn't even read that. That's part of it. When you go to another country with another culture, in the old days, in inverted commas, you'd prepare yourself for it, you'd read something about it.
Right.
Nowadays, people just expect the standardized, globalized product or experience no matter where they go.
They're used to primarily those who travel in the way that
Exactly.
you described. They want to go exactly like being at home, in
Yeah,
quotes. Yeah.
exactly. So I think that's part of the challenge, or was part of the challenge as well. I mean, we had a very well-established restaurant. It was known as one of the best restaurants at the time, but it was nothing that was standardized. The menu was different every day, and we cooked
Wow,
to order.
that is a lot of work.
That is a lot to tell me about it. I was in the kitchen. And some guests, you know, who got upset because they thought they'd order and in 5 minutes the pizza would come out of the oven, sort of thing. It wasn't the
Frozen
case.
pizza that was
Exactly.
popped into the oven, probably. This sounds like a fantastic resource, for the community and for people who stayed at your hotel for you.
Assisted in introducing our guests to the community. So when we sent a confirmation, we would also send them information, for example, about the school that we supported. And we
Oh,
would
wow.
ask our guests to bring any supplies that they had or would like to bring to donate to the school. And they could go and visit the school. And at the time, the school didn't have a swimming pool. So I think once a week, the principal came with a class and would actually use our swimming pool. So we tried in a number of different ways. I mean, guests even went to the papermaking project, the women's papermaking project, and could see and learn how handmade paper is made. We worked with a Dutch development aid agency. And trained people to become hiking guides and offered hiking tours in the area. It was so multifaceted, really. There were so many aspects when I think about it. We gave cooking classes about Jamaican cookery.
I even did that once in a hurricane, in the middle of a hurricane. Because
Barbara, you
the
are
best way
formidable.
to distract people from the hurricane is to take them to the
Right?
kitchen with some rum punch and cook.
I'm just getting this image of you two running this hotel. It's more like a community center. It's like an educational facility for the tourists,
Almost,
as
yes.
well as your staff. You were engaged in the community. You were a middle person for getting maybe some needed supplies to the school, or I've never heard of such a thing. We need more of that kind of engagement these days.
When you speak of our feminism or our activism, I think those years we were extremely, extremely active, but in a very hands-on doing, not just talking about. Today, sitting back and when we reflect, for a lot of people, success is measured in the amount of money you made. And for us, the success is that we were able to do this and touch so many people's lives.
That's so powerful. And if you recall, the early days of feminism was absolutely practical. It was about rape crisis centers, dealing with violence against women, women's self-help, mental health facilities. A lot of the early feminism was about practice, was about contributing concretely to the communities.
It was
Please.
really important to employ as many women as possible. And at the same time, we faced challenge of living in a very patriarchal society. Being a woman and giving instructions, maybe a lot of especially young men were not so keen on taking our instructions. I had one young man in the kitchen, and one day I just said to him, "Look, if you just don't want to take instructions from a woman, then I suggest you're in the wrong place, and perhaps you should go." And he did.
And
We have noticed is that whenever there was any slight problem, maybe with a sort of staff-related problem, the staff would run, particularly the men, straight to the Ministry of Labour to make a complaint. We've heard from our friend who used to manage the place where, while we were when we came to Berlin. She says that some of the guys who are they now work the same guys, they're now working for men, and they take stuff that they would not have taken from us.
Also, always being held to a higher standard.
And in a male-dominated industry.
Absolutely. And to
Because
be taken seriously.
I would describe you in an early ecofeminist who ecofeminism into practice in a real way that benefited both the community that you were set in, that you were a part of, and the
Yes.
people who were your guests who came to
Absolutely.
the hotel. And
Yes.
through that, you two strengthen your own relationship. Well, thank you so much for this. I've learned so much from you. It wasn't just the any old hotel you all were doing. I mean, you were on a
Oh,
mission.
no. Yeah.
It's wonderful. So here you are,
Here we
back in
are.
Germany,
Back in Germany, retired,
retired.
wishing we were somewhere sunny.
So you were there for 30 years. When you came back, what did you notice?
We were perceived as foreigners when we lived in Cologne. And for the most part, we are still perceived as foreigners today, to the point where once we were having a discussion about politics, history, and I said something quite critical about colonization. And I wasn't even speaking about the German colonization in particular, I was just speaking generally. And someone said to me, "Well, you know, if you're not happy here, if you're not satisfied here, why did you come here in the place in the first place? Why didn't you stay where you were?" And I sort of was shocked because I thought, I have as much as a right. My mother came from Germany. She suffered and lost most of her family, almost everybody in her family, except for her sister. And you are telling me I should go back where? These underlying tones, that's what comes through every now and then. So it's not that, you know, we are dressed in a burqa and perhaps face direct racism as perhaps a woman observing her Muslim traditional dress. For the most part, perhaps we pass, particularly since we are two now elderly ladies, in inverted commas. But there's always this underlying thing where we are perceived differently, or our views are very guarded, you know, because no one wants to really still acknowledge what happened. And for Barbara, as an artist, what we are recognizing now, Germany's been known for its culture of memory. But this memory culture is just one-sided. And if you are a person of color, it's rather disturbing to see that because they are trying to say you cannot honor and pay justice to the memory of colonization. It's only in Germany, particularly focused
On the Holocaust.
on the Holocaust. And they say, well, you can't compare anything to what happened in the Holocaust, but there, no one is trying to make that comparison. But what is important is to see, try and connect the dots and see that there is a parallel in certain ways of why and how colonization took place, and why and how the invasion towards the East took place during the war, the Second World War.
The commitment to memory is commitment to remembering one set of experiences at and none of the other ones that have played a very important part in world
You can
history.
speak to that. Yes, yeah.
You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, California, and on the World Wide Web at www.kpfa.org. In the first half of my program today, you listen to a conversation with who I refer to as eco-feminism practitioners, Shireen Aga and Barbara Walker, who started the first eco-tourist hotel in Jamaica, but with a very important twist.
I hear precious words. Tell me your story. I'll be listening to your dreams and worries. This bond, this earth and trees. And like a mirror, sister, you reflect it all back to me. If you need me, just know you can't always call. I'm here to witness you grow, hold you where you fall. Sister, I've got your back. Sister, I've got you. I'll be a silent space where you can rest your head. Blue room with fireplace. I trust you. It's easy to be real.
You just listened to a song composed and performed by Afro-German feminist musician Oyane Roach. Now let's get back to our interview.
And no, and the other thing we find is, of course, there is, which is very important, there is a big movement now, a decolonization movement here, and which is very, 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 very important. But coming from the ex-colonies, we have a different view of decolonization. Mm-hmm. Here, it's more about reflecting, returning stolen artifacts.
Renaming
places, streets to honor the black ancestors rather than the colonial masters. We see it coming from the colonies, but particularly from the Caribbean, where there was enslavement. When is the reparation going to take place? I mean, the King of England still can't even say sorry, right? So for us, decolonization is a whole different story. Mm-hmm. Because you'll find in the Caribbean that those structures, even in governments today, those structures are still there. And how do you get rid of those structures? Reparation does not mean give us money. Reparation could mean help us build our education system.
So reparation isn't like individually giving money to some person who was affected, but as you're saying, you know, building structures,
building schools,
infrastructure.
Helping us to become energy resilient, hurricane resilient. There are lots of things that the Global South would need. And this could also be reparation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the King of England has to dig into his big, very large pocket and send us money.
It can even be something like cancelling debt, because the point is a lot of former colonies, their resources were taken, but not much was invested in developing their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Then when they became independent, in order to start developing their countries, they had to borrow money. And many countries to this day are still paying off their debts and trying to play catch up.
Right.
And now
you have brought in such an important point, thinking about decolonization from the perspective of the dominant countries compared to the perspectives of the places that have been colonized. It's a completely different set of repairing that needs to happen. It's not repairing the names of the streets, as you said.
Not enough.
Yeah.
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 And when you see what happened recently at the last COP conference, the climate conference, that is what even the various tribal groups are trying to say, that they are the ones that are actually still preserving the forests and large tracts of natural environment.
Right.
They have not contributed primarily to the various challenges we face through global warming and climate change. Mm-hmm. Yet They are the first ones to face the negative impacts, and
Right.
all they are asking for is assistance in helping them to preserve what they have been doing for hundreds of years, and give them a fair chance. And yet we still have the structure that the developed countries in the north, although they are the primary source of, say, carbon emissions and so on through industrialization, are reluctant to assist and keep their commitments to provide the necessary funds so that the poor countries of the global south have an opportunity to address the challenges they face and find alternative means of still providing a fair environment for their people. So, for example, many global countries in the south could, instead of going through the whole thing of oil extraction and being dependent on oil or coal, fossil fuels, they could make the transition straight away to renewable energies. But that requires money.
What you're talking about, I just want to be clear. You're not talking about foreign aid where that aid comes in and most of it gets extracted back out.
That's right. Exactly.
You're talking about providing the infrastructure, no strings attached, so to speak.
That's right.
Just build the schools, build the infrastructure, renewable energy, and then go away.
Well,
Don't
actually, it
expect,
would benefit the northern countries because a lot of them are now very concerned about migration, right? We don't want people coming from the south. Well, if they had co living conditions that allowed them to lead a decent life, they wouldn't probably want to leave their homes.
People
Most
don't
people.
just choose a map and look at a place
No.
on the map and say, I want to go there. It's not like they're going camping,
They're not going on holiday.
Right, exactly.
Provide the necessary assistance, and you probably wouldn't have such a problem with migration.
Exactly. Wars, poverty are, the primary causes
Right.
of migration.
So it is. Also looking a little bit of what we can do, how we can do.
You're an artist. Talk to us about how you use your art, what you do with your art. What is your art medium?
Oh, many. I do mixed media. I work on paper. I sculpt. I'm a sort of multidisciplinary. Is that, I think, what you call me? I work a lot on memory. I have my ancestors from Africa. My ancestors are from Germany. I carry the memory of two horrific events in world history. That's major part of my work. I make comment on political events, current events. That's often my themes. And I also do work in regards to the environment. These are what I my goddess works. Because I see the goddess, I see the earth is the goddess, is our earth mother. So I do quite a lot of work in terms of of the goddess, and what we are doing to her. Those are my sort of three major themes that I work on. I was lucky enough to have one show in 2024 here in Berlin, and I'm having a small show at the Memory Center for the Jewish School in Cologne. My mother was a student there. At the Jewish school, and they have a mini museum about the Jewish school, and they do about four exhibitions in the year, and I'll be having a show there in October of this year. The hard part is to find the space to show, but I keep working, I keep doing.
Yes, of course, you're not going to stop.
Not going to stop, but now of course I've hit upon the part that I have to prepare for when I'm no longer here,
Right.
and get it all sorted.
One thing I noticed from my recent trips to Berlin is it seems it's a place for able-bodied people. It's a place for younger people, that it's, I didn't see too many people in wheelchairs or too many very elderly people. Is my observation off? I'm talking specifically about Kreuzberg and the places where
But
I hung out.
that's a very young person area. Kreuzberg Neukölln is very sort of hip. No, I think the population is getting older and older.
And we see, no, I think we see quite a lot of older people. For us, coming from the global south, we find the mobility factors here, of course, quite good in comparison to what, say, we have in Jamaica or India. I mean, the
Right.
last years of my parents' life, they couldn't get out because, you can't get out in a wheelchair. But here, at least, you can. If you are not able, you can get around to a certain extent. It could always be better, but it's much better than it is in our home countries.
Right.
So everything is relative.
Yes, it is. It is. And Shireen and Barbara, you two have, you said you've known each other for 50 years. And some of that you have been partners. Some of those years you've been partners.
All of the years.
Oh, you've been partners for 50 years? Okay. You really were babies.
We actually got married in 2016.
Okay. All right.
Immediately, yeah.
So you are a mixed culture couple, intercultural couple, living in Germany, started in Cologne. You have your respective origin stories, India, Jamaica, right? So to talk a little bit more personally, how do you make sense of all that? And what does it mean right now in this moment of so many divisions and so much rhetoric, especially from our political leaders about race, about origin? How do you make sense of that as a couple?
We actually don't. It's quite terrifying and very unsettling. You wonder if you have to go where do you go? Because this kind of rhetoric is, it's not only in the north, it's also in the south. Sometimes I say, to Shireen, well, we just have to enjoy the day and live the day and not and try not to worry too much about this very negative political environment in which we're currently living. But it's very, very unsettling and very frightening.
I can
Because
imagine.
even some people say, well, you can always go back to Jamaica. Yes, we can go back to Jamaica. But then again, in Jamaica, we have the challenge of being a couple, which was difficult enough when we lived there those years in running the hotel. And do you want to live that again, or do you
Right.
want to live in a space where you can be recognized as a couple? So and to go to India, it going to India would have the same challenges.
Right.
And then when you get to our age, do you really want to pick up and pack up and ship out again?
Exactly.
Is the
So this
solution to run
question.
away, or is the solution to stay and fight it head on? But then when you're over 70, you don't have that energy anymore to do so much battling. It's very difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. And this question of where is home and where do we belong
That's
are
right.
not easy questions. They're
No.
very deep. They're
Very, very deep.
emotional,
And
spiritual, and physical and
that is
material,
correct.
right?
That's right. Because I remember when I went back to Jamaica in 1993, the first couple of years were really quite difficult for me because I realized I was not being recognized as a Jamaican. So there I was at, in inverted commas, home, and people were looking at me like I'm some strange German woman. And of course, when I'm here, then people look at me like some strange Jamaican woman. And it's difficult.
In
You're
between, yeah.
in between these cultures, and you have to learn to belong inside yourself.
And the good news is that you have each other, to support each other to do that. And I'm sure each of you have your respective, parts that you have to take care of on your own as well.
Yes, but it's the times that we live in at the moment, we find them really scary.
I met you through a conversation we had organized by Cassandra at the Women's Center.
Invitation to us came through Yasmin because she thought it was a good mix.
It certainly was the
And
conversation, with the oldies, in
yes.
quotes, the oldies of the Afro-German movement,
Yes, dear Williams.
and then you all in the mix, and then, we had some other folks who weren't part of either,
Yeah.
and it was an amazing conversation.
It was a good afternoon.
It was my lucky day that I had a chance to meet you two and have you on my program today.
Hey, our lucky day that we're on your program and to get to know you a bit better.
Thank you.
And of course, when we first got here, we had about a year here to find our feet. Then came COVID, which threw everything out of control. And we met up with the group of Black German women through a friend of ours who lives in Cologne, because we were involved in the beginnings of the ISD and the ADEFRA in the 80s when we were living in Cologne. And we have this friend there, Sheila, and who was also one of the founders. Sheila was visiting us in Berlin, and through Sheila we met Jasmine and Ria, and that's how we all got connected.
After the wall came down, you said there were all kinds of racial violence
Yeah.
against foreigners. Can you just say a little bit about that? What happened? The wall came down. There was supposed to be unification.
Yeah, but there was a great influx of people from Eastern Europe, and I think that's put a strain, I think. And I, you know, this the, it happened. I think it happened, but it wasn't something that was planned. And what happened after the wall came down, I don't think there was a plan. Many, many people from Eastern Europe flooded the West. The West was overwhelmed. People were overwhelmed. There were lots of strangers around. So if you were a stranger that looked different, you could have a problem. And then there were attacks on places where Vietnamese people lived, or where Turkish people lived. There was just generally a very strange, strained atmosphere. Can't really put it into words. Came to Berlin on a visit in 1990, and we were very uncomfortable here. It was just strange. If you'd asked us in 1990, would you ever live in Berlin? We'd have said no.
Got it.
Think really it had to do with the fact that there was this big change of the status quo, this huge change, and
A lot of people lost in the way.
a lot of people got lost on the way. And I think the plan of developing what was to become a reunified Germany, I think that was a little bit learning by doing. My personal feeling that there was really a concrete plan. Now, this is how we're going to do this. And
People got, they couldn't,
disillusioned.
disadvantaged. There was the rate of exchange at the time when it became one currency for
Yeah.
both East and West. And a lot of people that were in the former East lost out in that sense. And I think people were very disparaging from the former West about everything in the former East.
East.
And that wasn't the case. There were a lot of good things in the system. For example, right now, politically, there's a big discussion with our current chancellor here saying that people can't contribute to the economy with if they desire life work balance, and there must be no more working part time. Well, one of the reasons why people work part time, and it's
Particularly
mainly
women.
particularly women, is because they have to take care of their children. There just aren't
Right.
enough places for their children to go to kindergarten and be taken care of while they work. Well, in the former East, this was actually very well organized, and most
Child.
went to work full time. So people resented that the government from the West came and then sort of disparaged them and said, oh, well, this is all bad, this is all run down. Some things were run down, but not everything was bad. And I think that anger has been simmering all these years, particularly in the areas that are still not well to do and, economically challenged. And that is leading now, after all these years, again to the rise of the extreme right in terms of the political spectrum today.
And your chancellor is quite right wing, isn't he?
He wouldn't like want to call him that, but he panders a lot of politicians, more center-right politicians, make the mistake of pandering to the right in the hope of attracting people to them and say, look, we're pretty much doing what they're doing, but just not as extremely as they are. But they do pander
To garner the vote,
to
they
garner
hope.
the vote.
We've seen how where that leads us,
Yes, it's
in the
happening
United
here.
States, extremely right now.
Yeah.
If you had to make a headline about your lives, what would that headline be?
Be the change you want to see. Actually do. It's not enough to complain. It's not enough to talk. It's not enough to write about things or do things. You actually have to do something to make a change. Because the only way we're going to make a change is if every one of us makes if every one of us were to make a very small change in our immediate communities. You'd have a landslide.
That's
And I
a
think
wonderful
the
metaphor.
strength of numbers, because that's what Gandhi did in a lot of his efforts, is these marches to the sea. Because at that time in India, the British were taxing salt very heavily. And he said, well, we will march to the ocean, to the coast, and we will
Make
just
salt.
make salt ourselves, the salt pans and dry the salt. And I think he was someone who tried to unify, particularly in a country like India, different cultures, different religions. And I think for me, that's one of the biggest lessons, is to just see what we have in common, our humanness. And let's be kind to each other and let's understand each other on that level, irrespective of skin color, of where we come from. If we would just respect each other as humans with the same common needs and be kind and
Just love each other.
just
Right.
smile even at your neighbor, support your neighbor. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be big actions.
Right.
But
And
all that adds up.
exactly. And the common needs are need for the basics, obviously, livelihood, and also the need for recognition and
Yes,
dignity and
absolutely.
acknowledgement that we are human.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. Yeah.
Yes.
Perfectly said that.
Thank you
Yeah.
so much for having
You're very
taken the
welcome.
time. You just listened to a conversation with Shireen Aga, who describes herself as an on and off hotelier, and her partner of 50 years, artist Barbara Walker. Their relationship began with a deep friendship between their Jewish mothers, both Holocaust survivors, and their fathers, whom the two mothers met at an international center in Manchester, England. One is Indian and the other Jamaican. Shireen and Barbara shared their story of having been the owners of the first ecotourism hotel in Northeast Jamaica and their lives in Berlin after their retirement during the COVID pandemic. The conversation led me to rethink the prevailing ways of the decolonial movement in the U.S. and other Western countries, and how to blend a commercial enterprise with true community service and partnership. That's it for today's Women's Magazine. I'm Margot Okazawa-Rae, your host. Thanks to Kirsten, Rod, and all the engineers at KPFA. You go out with Lover Is Just a Name, written and performed by King Josephine, queer Black German singer and songwriter. Stay tuned next for Green Street with Patty and Doug Wood on KPFA Radio.
I never really knew you. What a shame, what a shame, what a shame. In love we were for sure.
is just a name. I still don't really know you. We say we're friends, but we hardly see us in the end. You seem to hide yourself, but I know if we'd meet, we would laugh. Funny, I miss your jokes. Funny, I miss your jokes. Oh, you saw before, but you went ahead and ran right through the end. Oh, you saw before, you never knew who I was. I saw before, but I went ahead and ran right through the end. Oh, I saw before, I never knew who you were. We saw before, but we went ahead and ran right through the end. Oh, we saw before, broken hearts to mend. We saw before, but we went ahead and ran right through the end. Oh, we saw before, but I'll never trade those days. I always laugh with you. Baby, you are hilarious. Funny, I miss your jokes.